Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
It's fight week, Andrew. Fight week. McGregor, Cerrone.
Oh.
ESPN, Saturday night. Not that I'm going to fight with you.
Okay, no.
Because people have complained.
Yeah, people have had it.
I think
the podcast has run its course. I think people have had it.
I don't believe that to be the case, but they do want us to fight less. And it's not a contrived thing. We genuinely just disagree.
Look, I'm not going to start pretending to agree on things just to appease people. I don't think that people want that either. So, I don't know. Whatever the show has been, it's going to continue to be.
Now,
and I'm sorry.
You say what it has been, what it will continue to be. People are looking for a segment. Andy's life problems,
yeah.
Andy's issues.
Yeah. I saw you tweeted a poll about that.
People want it.
Well, I'm not going to force that every week.
No,
stuff doesn't happen every week.
Jesus, it happens a lot, though.
Well, maybe. And
you tell me a lot about certain things. We'll be walking down the hallway and you go, the weirdest thing happened today, and you'll just...
Actually, I did have one today. I'll do it real quick because I want to get to the
soccer
stuff.
No, save it. Save it to the end.
All right.
All right, mark it.
Let me write it down because I'll forget. Yeah, this was actually quite annoying.
you see what I mean? You're gold.
It doesn't happen all the time, though, but it happened today on the train. No, what I was going to say at the start of this podcast was I'm kind of dreading this podcast in particular. And look, I've grown immune to doing these shows after Tottenham losses to Liverpool in the Caught Offside Cup. Like,
right.
It doesn't even move me anymore. The game ended, and I was pretty unemotional about it until you obviously had to text me. Oh, we've got to do a show on Monday. Well, this is fresh in our heads. Can't wait to talk about it. Yeah, me neither.
Unbelievable.
But the only reason is I already know I've been getting the tweets of people who are tired of us arguing about stuff. And I already know before we even start this podcast that we're going to disagree on something. And I'm just preemptively annoyed about it. And so I don't know what else. Like,
let's be calm and rational then.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we always try to be that.
It's just I get passionate. You get annoyed at my passion and then.
No, I get annoyed at your contempt for my views and your smugness.
I genuinely am not that way. I just believe that I am right.
I know you do. So we'll talk about we'll talk about the Caught Offside Cup. Sergio Aguero has to be mentioned, of course. The U.S. as we speak, I don't know if the press conference has wrapped, but Brian McBride is now the GM of U.S. men's soccer. So he spoke this morning. Him and Ernie Stewart. I think there's. We'll go through some of it because I still don't know if there's total clarity over everyone's roles here.
No.
So we will talk about that maybe in the second half of the podcast.
Or even what a general manager will actually do.
And he does, now, he does lay it out. I don't know if you've seen some of this, but he does lay out some of his responsibilities. But I just sometimes, him and Ernie Stewart, I just worry about overlap versus collaboration. I don't know. It feels a little bit like uncharted territory, which doesn't necessarily mean that this is bad.
In the panic,
it's just different.
In the panic after not qualifying for Russia 2018, it does feel like there were jobs created to address issues, but they are now the same job.
Job one, create time machine and reinstall Jurgen Klinsmann as manager, because we would have made it to the semifinals of the World Cup. Let's see here. All right, let's just start with it. The big story from the weekend, of course, on this show, Tottenham versus Liverpool. 1-0, it goes to Liverpool. They just simply, they don't lose, even when they don't play great. It's just the way it is. Tottenham were kind of just very Tottenham-y in this, in certain ways. In fact, you know, here,
I don't think they were Tottenham-y at all.
Well, in that they lost to Liverpool. And
In
that they struggled to create. Well, they had a few legit great goal-scoring opportunities, but...
When they decided to play after around 70 minutes.
Yeah, but for the most part, like, if you go back to pre-Mourinho Pochettino, really, like, second half of last season Pochettino up through now, Tottenham have kind of been this team that are not possession-based and are counter-attacking-based. And I think that that is, again, what they were yesterday.
I would disagree with that. Also, even in the midst of that collapse at the end of last season in everything but the Champions League. In the midst of that, you had a trip to Anfield where, by anybody's admission, if we're being totally fair, you should have come away with the minimum of
with
points,
a point.
Probably with 3 points, considering the chances that were spurred. There was every chance, or there was every possibility that that should have happened.
But this is what they have. They have been a counterattacking side that is not possessing the ball against teams that are of their quality or better. Even against Ajax, all their goals were counterattacking goals.
With patterns of play, things happened. There was interchanges.
This is where I knew it was going to go. So I have my observations about this game.
I want to hear from you. You're the Spurs fan, and I will.
Here is the issue that I have with people, and you happen to be sitting in that chair, so it's going to feel like it's directed at you. But it's just kind of a narrative at large. People hate Jose Mourinho, and that's it. And they do. And so because he's cocky, because of the way he is, because people don't always love the brand of football that he plays, people have decided over the course of years that they don't like him. And so they are going to fit their narratives about him into a box. And this applies to Tottenham fans. This applies to non-Tottenham fans. And I feel like there is a sense of kind of not being totally fair with how we're judging the way things are progressing under him.
I mean, Andrew, let's forget it's Jose Mourinho there. I mean, look at the way that team was set up in that first half. Total and utter submission. It was, at times there was six at the back with four in front of it. When they got the ball, eventually, I mean, law of averages, they got the ball back. They wellied it up anywhere. And what was interesting, the couple of times that things came off for them, where they pressured Henderson with his back to them, created a chance. Where there was a mistake by Gomez, they created a chance. But like, for most of that half, it was total and utter submission. And they still conceded a goal. Right? Now, the stats are there, Andrew. Tottenham have never, ever ceded control of a game like this to any other team. Now, here's a Liverpool fan saying this. Liverpool are an excellent side right now. But Tottenham didn't even try and test the limitations of that midfield, test the fatigue of the side until 20 minutes towards the end. But that's not what Mourinho wanted. Mourinho went into this game hyping Liverpool, praising Liverpool, complaining about his lack of options and just ceding the game to Liverpool beforehand until the second half, when I think there was a dawning realisation that Liverpool weren't quite at it. It was only 1-0 at half time, and Tottenham played 10-15 yards higher up the field, and they started to get some success as Liverpool tired. More than that though, you know, we have this manager talking about options, this and that. Look at the difference Lo Celso made when he came onto the field. Like, I can't have it that you have this player that was so transformative in the Spanish league and so coveted by the previous manager, and he's left idling on the bench when the impact he could have made to that midfield throughout the entire game would have been amazing. But look, this is what I said at halftime. I tweeted this out. Mourinho was expected to set up this way. He didn't disappoint. That said, what a bleak, unimaginative game plan. You know, maybe I'm the idiot coming on here complaining about what I and everyone else who's watched him for the last decade saw coming down the tracks. This is what you're going to get from him against everybody except the absolute dreck. And we should just get on with it. Maybe I should stop complaining.
Well, then you need to tell me what is the right way to play against this Liverpool team. Because they're beating everybody. And so Mourinho sets up in a defensive style against them for one half.
The point is, he
sets up in a defensive style against them for one half. He concedes just one goal. And then, like you just said with your own words, he reassesses it at halftime. And then changes things, and they get themselves back into the game. So what is the reason that everyone is spewing hate at the way he did this?
Because he's starting from a position of, look, I'm telling you what you have is not good enough. It's, you know, we don't have Harry Kane. Apart from the fact they went to a Champions League final. Got to a Champions League final without Harry Kane. Whoa. But you don't have him. There's no other way. What he sells you is there's no other way this can be. You adjust your expectations accordingly. And at the end, we've got a tweet like this from Brendan, who seems like a lovely guy. I must say, the game against Liverpool was the first time I saw a proper Mourinho performance. Tanganga is the future of this backline. Thought he did well, but he was playing as the second of two fullbacks in the side. right? Sanchez played arguably his best game in a Spurs shirt. I thought Alderweireld was good as well. Even though we came up empty, there are a lot of positives to take away. And honestly, I don't see them. It's going to be like this against the big sides. And it just seems so wrong from what Spurs were beforehand, which was a pressing team, a team that tried to get on the front foot, even if it lost.
But I'm telling you, they haven't been that in 2 years. Like, they weren't that under Pochettino either. And this is the same squad. And you can brush aside Harry Kane not being there. That matters. Tanguy and Ndombele not being there matters. Even Ben Davies, they're playing Tanganga because they have no choices. Like, Ben Davies not being there matters. Moussa Sissoko not being there matters. And he hangs with Liverpool and loses 1-0 where they have two legitimate scoring chances in the last 20 minutes. And people are still finding reasons to hate him. And that's what I'm saying, is people are not judging him fairly. They're playing against a team in Liverpool that are crushing everyone. But he hangs with them and nearly beats them at the end. And we still want to hate him.
But Andrew, it was clear from early on that Liverpool weren't quite at it. And yet nothing changed. Nothing changed. Until
was it clear from early on that Liverpool weren't at it?
Tottenham had two chances in the early stages, one from a turnover from Henderson. There wasn't the fluidity in that midfield whatsoever. In fact, in the second half, Liverpool still had all the ball and kept giving it away. It was an absolute travesty. Not something to be praised that Tottenham didn't equalise.
This is what I was saying.
First half possession, like, Andrew, 27%. This is from Jonathan Liu. Son Heung-min, their best attacking player, did not have a single touch in the Liverpool half between the 30th minute and the 60th minute. None of which would stop Mourinho attempting to spin the basic poverty of ambition as some ingenious master plan. If we tried to play the way we did, Mourinho said, in the last 20 minutes from the beginning, I think we would collapse because the players are not used to playing in this style and they are not adapted. We did the maximum we could do. And
unfortunately, we'll never know if that's true.
I believe that to be the case. I believe more in your team than you do.
Well, maybe that's true, but I've also watched my team more than you have, and I've seen them for 2 years now play like that. At a certain point, how many times can you see them play competition of Liverpool's caliber and play this way and think that you're going to get something different the next time?
But this is four wins out of 9 league games now. You know, it's not just against Liverpool. You're going away to Norwich and you're drawing. The manager was brought in to do something, Andrew, and he's not doing it. And I don't believe it'll get any better.
And for what it's worth, too, like for this continued criticism, they're not trying to... They actually outshot Liverpool in this game.
Absolutely,
Well, then how can we argue both ways? That, you know, he's not trying
because
to win,
looking at,
but he's outshooting them in the process.
But Andrew, you and I both know you have to watch the games. And you can't just go on the dry stats. And you're not going to say to me, watching that full 90 minutes, that, shots equals Spurs dominance, and that ties in with what we saw on the field. It absolutely doesn't.
No, look, I just think it's not fair for us to watch Liverpool roll over everyone, Tottenham being what they've been for a year and a half coming to that game, and then us criticize them for playing a defensive style and trying to score goals on a counterattack.
And
what anybody else would have done.
I think going back to Brendan's tweet, the classic Mourinho performance. I mean, a classic Mourinho performance was when Klopp went there to Old Trafford in the spring of 2018, when Liverpool were rolling at that time in the Champions League, and we were beginning to see the genesis of the team right now. Mo Salah was scoring all these goals, and he stopped them playing, and he won 2-0. But it's just diminishing returns, as we saw at United. Something would go wrong at United, and he would say it was still a good performance in what we tried to do and all this. I don't think it's going to work here, Andrew. Yeah, I think it's over for his style of play. And you don't have to face Liverpool every week. But when he doesn't get the results, like he didn't get against Norwich, like he almost didn't against Brighton, when those things start to happen, like you heard the Tottenham crowd yesterday. I mean, from about the 30th minute, like, screaming at the team to do anything other than just sit back in this 6-4-0 that either me or you could have come up with.
I believe that there is clear goalpost moving with him. Like, we are reshaping the boundaries for how we can find ways to criticize
what
he does.
And he hasn't.
No. I'm saying to find ways to criticize the things he does. He gets there, now it's Mourinho, he's never going to play young players. Well, he just gave a youth player his debut against Liverpool yesterday. But nobody's going to praise him for that. Instead, they're going to praise him for being too negative.
I think you could have had the classic Mourinho job with Lo Celso's goal. I don't know how he missed. And it would have been 1-1. And Tottenham fans would be buying what he's selling.
No one is saying the things that they're saying about Mourinho today if Lo Celso scores that goal or if Son scores before that.
I couldn't have watched that game people would with any other opinion.
I'm telling you, people would and be I sitting even, here today if Lo Celso even, and Son finish their goals and it ends 2-1 to Tottenham, people are talking
classic
about...
Classic Mourinho
it's,
job.
It's just what but, he does. But, they defended against the best attacking team in the world, then he found a way to score two goals. It's a brilliant Mourinho performance, but these guys, they didn't convert their chances.
But again, and, it goes back to what I'm saying. He's not doing what he used to do. And I mean, we saw it at United as well, and it's followed through. And he, look, I don't know what else to say.
I just know already.
Do you feel good about where this team is at?
No, but I didn't feel good about where they were at 6 months ago either.
Do you feel good about the direction in which the manager, can you see things that he's doing where you think?
Okay. Not yet. And what did I told you for every week the last month that people have started making their judgments about Mourinho before he's even had a January transfer window, before he's even had a full week until this week. This is his first full week without midweek matches for him to be, you know, getting his team ready for. Like, he needs more than 3 months than two. How long has it actually been? Three months since he taken over? 2 months?
It's taken him X amount of games to make Spurs look exactly like Manchester United did it towards the end of his tenure.
But they weren't coming from a place of strength. Like, I don't understand how people believed that.
No, things were going
wrong. The same exact team that we had a couple months ago and the team that we have now, and like everything was going to be completely different. He advanced them into the knockout stage of the Champions League and he brought them back into the race for top four.
So the only way they can be is what they are now. There can be no other way, you know.
No, but I'm saying, how about like, I'm saying more than 2 months of him being there to find out what they can be. You're making a judgment after Liverpool. After a Tottenham Liverpool game,
no,
like, this is
I made my judgment
time.
On him ages ago.
Well, you're right. Everyone has made their judgments on him ages ago.
Having to watch the Brighton game where Spurs fans got upset, and that's another thing he's brilliant at. Like, he kind of just, he has a way of uniting the fan base behind what I don't believe is anything much. And the performance against Brighton, I remember I tweeted, I can't watch Spurs anymore. Like, I'll have to give this a swerve. This is just dreadful. And, you know, people jump on you for that.
But like, what you mentioned before about Lo Celso not playing. Like, this is now a narrative that's exploded out of nowhere. Like, everybody thought Christian Eriksen should be getting meaningful minutes, and now we saw him play against Liverpool and he was poor.
Then who's the guy that Lo Celso should be playing ahead of? To Eriksen's credit, he played one of the most prescient passes of the entire game.
Where was he playing, Andrew?
For most of the game? In this, like, deep-lying defensive role with everybody else backs to the wall kind of job. I mean, he's not going to thrive in that kind of position anyway. That team was never set up to be any good. And it's not either or. You can play Lo Celso and him together.
But who's the guy that Lo Celso is playing over? And we'll see it now. He's going to go into the starting 11 now because he had a good 20 minutes that he came on, and so they're going to see where that goes. But like,
is he?
I would be surprised if he didn't start playing more. I thought he came on and played well, even with the missed chance.
I mean, we thought the same about Ndombele, and we don't know.
He's hurt.
Well, I mean, that's what we heard from him, but then Mourinho kind of intimated that he wanted him to play more regardless, or, you know, we don't know where we are with this guy.
Well, Mourinho's frustrated with Ndombele because he wants him to be playing, and this guy can't stay healthy, and that is frustrating to a new manager who's trying to figure out what his team is. Ndombele would be perfect for this team, a defensive midfielder who will push the play forward. They don't have that now.
So they're going to make the top four?
No. I've felt that way for a while now. I don't see a top four side when I watch them play. And I don't put that all on him.
I thought in the second half, and I was exchanging texts with a friend of mine who was a hardcore Liverpool fan, but will never, ever be afraid to like text back and say when we're not up to it. And he's like, we need to get out of this somehow. We were absolutely gassed. That was outside of, there was actually a couple of moments against Watford where I was worried, where Watford should definitely have scored. But the chances, the two chances in particular, that Spurs carved us open. I was like, I can't believe that's
the thing with Liverpool is I think now their reputation has become more important than their actual performance. And by that I mean, like with Tottenham in the first half of this game, teams are now entering games against Liverpool
and submitting.
Just expecting, in some ways, expecting the worst.
Some teams are.
I mean, look, you can probably count on a couple hands the teams that have gone at Liverpool in the league and come away victorious. I mean, how many times has that happened over the last 2 years? Any? Once?
Oh,
Manchester City
teams,
once?
Teams who've given it a go.
Who decided to really go at them and won doing it?
I mean,
it's probably,
I mean,
more,
they haven't lost any games
right,
in the last
so
year.
So it's probably more times that teams, so what I'm saying is it's probably more times in the last 2 years that teams have gone at Liverpool and gotten utterly embarrassed.
But again, yeah. But if you look at the run of the last few games, Andrew, I mean, Liverpool have had 1-0 wins over the course of the season. Mm-hmm. They blew the second place team Leicester away. But if you look at the last run of games, who else did they blow away? Nobody. Like, a lot of teams have been in it right to the end, including Watford at home. So,
well, yeah. I mean, that's a sign of a great team. We say sometimes that they're able to not always have their
best, and they
continue to win.
It is a sign, though, that it's not exactly like they've had it their own way. Look at them away at Villa, where they had to get it right at the death. And that is where you come back to. You look at Spurs and you think, yeah, they really should have had more of a go. It's really that simple.
Well, again, we're gonna disagree
You're
on the
so
way
so sad.
Way. 45 minutes, half of playing defensive against the world's best team, to me, is not an egregious error. Reassess at halftime, came out more attacking. Like, I just don't understand why that's unusual.
Absolutely.
People hate him,
rudderless.
And they decided it.
Yeah, but once upon a time, he had this thing about him where he could sit in a low block and then he would cut you open. And...
Well, and where was he doing that?
But the idea, but I also heard this thing.
Where was that? Chelsea, Inter?
He didn't have a centre forward. Yeah,
he doesn't have those players here.
But again, even Rashford, he was able to do something with Lukaku and Rashford that day against Klopp and get the goals that he needed. I don't
Different know. Liverpool today. It's the best team in the world, and it's not close.
Okay.
And so,
all right. Well,
I'm not
trying to convince you. I didn't realise. I actually thought I thought you'd be a little bit closer to me in how I saw the game, but.
No, I'm just not ready. Look, here's what I'll say, like, because I know the majority agree with you on this. Like, I see it.
I wouldn't think so.
The way people feel about Mourinho, I see the things people are saying about him. I feel like this is just too reactionary for me to hate this guy so early on in his tenure.
Can I ask you to do one thing? Stop saying hate. I don't hate the guy. That is ridiculous. In fact... His Inter Milan version of his team, I absolutely love.
But I'm saying he's been the subject of mockery for a while.
Yeah, and you know what? I've said myself it's been unfair, but his attitude towards the game now is not in sync with the trends of the game right now. And so what if he's out of sync, some people say? Well, the fact is, the problem with him being out of sync is it's not working anymore.
Well, and here is what I will say. If there is a day then when I agree with that, I will say that. Like, I'm not gonna, I will not just universally love him or however it is that I feel. But I'm just saying that, like, this amount of time coming off of this game against that opponent, like, it just felt like, I read Nick Miller's piece, at ESPN FC, where he just crushes him for decisions made in this game against Liverpool. And like, I just feel like the guy has been there for such a short amount of time, and you want to wait until he's played a team maybe as good as any Premier League team we've ever seen, potentially. And you want to wait for that moment to crush him.
And I'm not.
If I think he has failed with Tottenham, I will say it, but I just don't believe that it's fair to say that yet.
But I'm seeing the games with my eyes, and I'm reading other people who, Andrew, games before this were saying this is late stage Mourinho already. Okay, we got to move on.
All right, we'll move on to Manchester City. And really, there's not a ton to say about when Manchester City beats up on Aston Villa and wins 6-1.
There's a bit in the mailbag we got to discuss.
Okay, the only things I want to say about it, well, I'll get to Sergio Aguero in a sec because he's incredible. But I also want to talk about Kevin De Bruyne real quickly, because I say all the time that there are different types of assists. Not every assist is created equal, and he, in my mind, continues to be the king of the true goal-scoring assist. He had the one ball that he played to Gabriel Jesus, where all Jesus has to do is just walk into it and put it in the net. I just feel like no one does it more than De Bruyne. He's incredible at it, and it's really, really fun to watch when he's playing.
That was
that
the
way.
Ball to the back post.
Right at halftime.
I mean, that's technically a cross, but I think it's a new type of cross. He is so accurate. Coaches in the past, and even managers who go on TV, Andrew, would say, he's done well there. He's just drilled it into that corridor of uncertainty between goalkeeper and last defender. Mm. But it seems less hit and hope than in previous generations. It's like he's actually actively picking someone out. And he is.
Oh, yeah.
The degree of difficulty and the regularity with which he does it is just stunning. And today, the weekend was set up for him. Yesterday was set up for him to go wild, and he didn't. He didn't fail.
No, he was great. But
you
really,
could say he was raptured into heaven.
I've heard people say that before. But really, though, the story of this game is, well, the positive story of this game is Sergio Aguero. Hat trick. He now becomes the Premier League's all-time foreign-born player in terms of goals scored, passing Thierry Henry, and now causing people to start debating whether or not he is the greatest striker in the history of the league. I won't say the whole first division, but we'll say in the Premier League era.
Yeah, and you know, his numbers and his level of consistency over a number of seasons means, if you're being fair, he gets in ahead of Luis Suarez or someone of that ilk. And I have no qualms with that whatsoever. Now, it was interesting. I read Mark Ogden, who was kind of saying, well, he doesn't get the credit he deserves.
And we've talked about that before. He's only made one EPL All 11, and that wasn't until 2018. I mean, how many great years did he have before that?
Right. And Mark kind of goes at the angle of, you know, well, why is this the case? He wrote this: Aguero does not seek publicity or use the media to his advantage, and playing for City has also impacted on his status beyond the Etihad. United, Liverpool and Arsenal are much bigger clubs on a global scale than City and command far greater media attention. They also have far deeper reservoirs of supporters who help raise the profile of their star players. It's so true. I mean, if you're looking at the elite clubs in the top flight right now, they are Arsenal, Manchester United and Liverpool, historically with deep fan bases around the world. And that does make a difference. But also, I think, from my point of view, why I'll think of Henry, I'll think of Shearer before him, is because with the City project, where all the money came in, there was this totally unfair, in my view of, well, they paid all this money, he's doing what he's supposed to do.
I don't think it's, but I think you're right.
But it's wrong for me to think that way. Not wrong for me to think that City are what they are because of money, but wrong for me to just expect him. Like, it shouldn't diminish his talent or ability.
No, but I think you're right in that perception exists, and it's why he doesn't necessarily receive the accolades
really.
It receives. Because when he slash they as a team do something well, I almost feel like there's a general boredom with it because like you said, it's just what is expected. If you're going to do the things and put a lineup out there that they have, this is what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, and any kind of thing or any kind of piece of art that's described as a project or you know, some kind of long-term plan is kind of diminished. It's not organic. We don't think of it in the same way as we think of other teams. And that's probably correct, but it should not take away from what Sergio Aguero has done. There have been big transfers come into clubs with lots of money. Mattia Kejman, I'm looking at you, at early stage Chelsea, and what happened there? Nothing.
Yeah, Mark Ogden said in that article that if Aguero had done this while wearing red, the perception of him would be completely different.
That's fair. Absolutely
it's probably
fair.
True. His goals per minute, he scores a goal in the Premier League once every 106 minutes. That is, of all players who have come through the league who have scored at least 20 goals, that is by far the best goal scoring rate. Harry Kane is second at 121 minutes per goal, and then Henry at 122.
He still has 85 odd to get close to Shearer.
Well, yeah.
That's another three seasons worth. He's going to be 34.
Will he catch, what is Wayne Rooney at, 208?
208, Andy Cole at 187. So he's going to, and Lampard at 177. So he's going to go past Andy Cole, I would imagine. And look at Lampard for a midfielder.
Yeah, right?
Absurd.
Yeah, always arriving late. It's just, it's the consistency from Aguero, more than 20 goals in 6 of his 8 seasons. So maybe there's a boredom with that too. Like, he never has this kind of like 40 goal season, but he never sinks below like 15. He's just kind of like solid every single year.
I think the fact you don't hear him speak very much at all is a thing. Like Alan Shearer in the midst of the Blackburn days, mic in front of his face after a game, Newcastle the same. Aguero, not so much. He lives a kind of a, if you saw the Amazon Prime documentary on City, kind of a closeted life. He's not out and about that much. He's certainly not like Otamendi, putting out pictures of himself in the mirror.
It looked like a Halloween costume. He thought he looked cool.
John Bruin put the lyrics from Crazy Town, come m'lady, come m'lady, that song, because he did look like a guy from Crazy Town.
Yeah, let's stay with this game for a sec, because I know you've had some thoughts on Danny Drinkwater. I was monitoring, was it your Twitter account or the show's account, as this game was transpiring?
Probably both.
Okay. It seemed like you want to get some things off your chest about him.
Well, like, I feel bad for him, first of all, because the first three goals that ushered people out of Villa Park were, you know, he was at fault. You could pick fault with him in nearly all of them. And in one of them, he could have registered an assist. I think it was Mahrez' second goal where he tries to turn in the box. And look, was anybody going to go in there and stop City in that form? Maybe not. But just that Dean Smith, you know, his comments, this isn't a gamble. How can you expect a guy who has not played any minutes in almost 2 years to come in and make an impact against a downhill City is just, oh my God. I mean, everyone saw this coming. I couldn't believe when he was starting. Now again, what options did they really have? Not a ton, but even still, the way he set it up, Conor Hourihan, not the most defensive of midfielders, and Drinkwater beside each other screening that back four and trying to stay compact.
No, and it was...
No.
The results were simply disastrous.
And what was jarring was him trying to track De Bruyne. He looked gassed. De Bruyne was breezing by him, and it just goes to show his lack of games. Yeah, things are getting kind of hot and steamy there for Dean Smith at Villa Park.
Yeah. Some other quick hits before we take a quick break here. For Arsenal, more frustration. Another 1-1 that they might have been fortunate to have, being that they had to play down a man for...
In the end, yeah.
Roughly, almost half an hour.
But they were very good for the first half, Andrew. They scored an excellent goal through Aubameyang and then should have followed up with a goal from Nicolas Pepe, but he had a bad touch when he turned.
So two things. You mentioned both of them just now that I wanted to mention. You see the goal that Arsenal scored, and like I can just... I'm not an Arsenal fan, but it's in moments like that where you can get in their head. Because like that is the brand of soccer that I feel like they believe they should be playing consistently.
Yes.
It's kind of like what they were in those Bergkamp, Henri years, and just when Wenger was at his best. Like it was great. It looked easy. Mm. It was pleasing on the eye. And so like you can just sense the frustration of why can't we bottle that? Why can't we do that more often? I guess it's just simply that they don't, like, anyone can bust that out, I guess, every once in a while, but they don't have the consistent talent to be able to
do
it.
And I guess their manager is trying to get them back to that. If Pepe doesn't take such a heavy touch, I think he scores, although with the way he's been this season, you're not guaranteed of that.
No, but there's a maddening element to him.
Yeah.
And you can tell, you're right, like, it's sometimes, I hope this doesn't come across too unfair, I see what Sadio Mane is now, and he's maybe a top three player in the world. But I try to remember to what he was like 3-4 years ago, and I feel like he had a little bit of that.
You used to call it all the time. You said he was the best, most frustrating striker in the league, and it's not that long ago. It's 15 months ago you said that.
All right, maybe. And I feel like, you know, Pepe's a lot younger, but, you know, people are going to get frustrated with him now when they see stuff like that happen.
Yeah,
but I'm telling you, he does a lot of the hard work, and it's the end that he just can't seem to get right. If I were Arsenal, I would stay with it. Stay with it. Fans, try to be patient with him. He's young. He's raw. But you can tell that, like, he'll figure it out at some point. I really do believe that. And when he does, I really think he can be a tremendous player. But, yeah, the red card for Aubameyang, I thought it was right.
Yeah, and people are making parallels between that and the Robertson tackle on Tanganga, which...
Also...
Listen.
It could have been.
Could have been, but you have to see the difference between the two. Whereas Aubameyang is tracking him, he can see him. Robertson takes a heavy touch and wins the ball and then goes follows through. Now look, letter of the law, that's a problem. But I think there was more malevolence in what Aubameyang did.
I mean, if we want to put them into tiers of red cards, yes, Aubameyang is probably more of a sure thing. But like players, like I don't think taking a heavy touch should be, you should be rewarded with getting a yellow instead of a red.
He nips in then gets the ball, right? Which proves to me and again, intent doesn't matter. And look, if you want to say it was a red card, yeah, okay. But it was a follow through on Tanganga as opposed to tracking him, seeing him, and then just hacking him like Aubameyang did.
Also, one other thing from this Arsenal game. You know, David Luiz, like, I'm not even,
Can I be fair? Before you begin what you're going to say, and I hate cutting across you, but...
Yeah.
You saw him step into midfield and ping that pass in to begin the move for the goal. We saw another chance earlier on where he plays a lovely ball over the top that puts, I think it was Pepe or Aubameyang in, and he plays Kolasinac in and they have a chance or whatever. Like, he was doing good creative things, but then he did David Luiz things.
Like, it was his Leroy Jenkins moment. Like,
oh, have we got that drop?
I don't know, but like, if you've never, I'm sure people have seen it. It's like a 15-year-old reference.
It's awesome, though. Yeah. I'd never known it until you told me.
Yeah, but like, you know, we're setting up a set piece. The game is tight. Like, people are getting into position, and then he just like upsteps Leroy Jenkins. No, no, no. Don't worry, everyone. I got this. And he fires one 40 yards over the net into the stands.
But it was,
and
it's glorious because like, it never had a hope. It was rising all the time. And it was just like everyone screamed, yeah. And he turns around and goes, no, it's fine. It's fine.
Like, what are you doing?
Like, from that distance. Now, he's hit some really good free kicks from decent distances. He did one at Anfield. He did one for Brazil against Colombia, I think in a Copa America or World Cup. Can't remember which. But that was, well, that must have been 60, 55 yards.
If you're going to do that, when if it goes right, then you just score the goal of the year. But when it goes wrong and you've tried it, you're going to get made fun of, especially when it's that bad.
NBC did a great job. They just tweeted out that free kick. It was perfect. It just summed everything up.
Let's see. Chelsea and United, they each grab must-needed wins.
Didn't see the Chelsea game, but presuming it was fairly comprehensive and that Burnley were kind of bad again.
I actually didn't see that game either. I'm not going to lie.
But what we should probably note out of that bunch was the United game. Marcus Rashford, Andrew, braced to take his league tally to 14 so far. He's 22 years of age. That was his 200th appearance for United.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Crazy. He gets to the mark quicker than Cristiano Ronaldo and Wayne Rooney, but still ranks behind Ryan Giggs, George Best and Norman Whiteside. That's great company to be in.
Yeah, and you wonder now if this young player pipeline will continue because Mason Greenwood's starting to look more and more comfortable.
I keep saying that someone along the line, some manager, if things go as expected with Greenwood and Rashford and Williams, so and indeed the signing from Swansea, whose name escapes me right now.
James?
Yeah, James. Why did I blank on that? But if things go the way they should go for those players, another manager is going to get the benefit of those players. It won't be Solskjaer, but he should get the credit for bringing them through.
Yeah, he's given these guys chances. I don't know who that other manager is going to be. I was going to bring this up when we talk about Spain, but if we're talking about possible United managers now, I'll just say that there's weird stories out of Barcelona now where it's just like behind the manager's back, other managers are being approached.
Well, one Xavi. In particular. Well, why Xavi, though? Apart from him being
a Barcelona... Well, he is managing currently, and he's a Barcelona legend.
In Qatar.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying put those... Like, he's probably being... Much the way that maybe Frank Lampard was being groomed to one day be Chelsea's manager. Like, it's not crazy to think that a club legend like Xavi
they're
is off
following
somewhere.
The Solskjaer method.
But, like... But then I also read that Pochettino was approached by Barcelona, which would be supremely interesting after he managed Espanyol and said
never.
He would never manage Barcelona. But I don't know if
football's like that, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Football life, they say, makes hypocrites out of all of us. Let's see. Two other things, the good and the bad right now in the lower half of the table. What is going on with Southampton is truly impressive, and it is – I think you have to, you mentioned this and I would echo it that, you really have to give some props to the board at that club for staying with Hasenhüttl through the disastrous 9-0, through a terrible start to the season and seeing it through. And now they go back, the team that beat them 9-0, they come back around and beat that team. And I'm sure this felt particularly good for them.
Yeah. Hasenhüttl said to BBC Radio 5 Live that the 9-0 was a big chance to do everything different and finding a way to get back to our fundamentals, our philosophy, and to a way of playing that is really nice to watch. So he kind of looks at it as a fresh start, a blank sheet after 9-0. There's no lower you can go, and obviously the team bought into that. He spoke about Danny Ings as well, and he said that he's changed the way he plays, he's not coming deep as much, and he's operating off the shoulder, which you can totally see. And that's what works best for him, arriving into the box, onto the ball, as opposed to dropping off and getting it. And look at the way he scored the winner. It's exactly that. running in and putting it between Schmeichel's legs, although he did get a touch. You got to give credit to the board and Hasenhüttl, because that is not what boards usually do after a 9-0.
No, no.
And he did acknowledge that in his interview. He's like, not too many people get a second chance after a 9-0. But clearly they saw enough and they were paying attention to what was happening at the club.
Yeah. So credit to them, because it's going well there. However, also on the South Coast, Bournemouth, it is not. And this has now truly become worrisome after, really, they just get torn to pieces by Watford, which can't happen to any club, let alone one that, you know, coming into the season, past seasons, we think somewhat highly of. Bournemouth now 4 points from a possible 33 over the last 11 matches. And kind of the unthinkable, because Eddie Howe is like an institution there. He's a god with that club. And like, there's murmurings now that maybe it's over for him. I would tell you that would be a mistake.
I think so too. But I do think that there was something in his post-match press conference that worried me too. They talked about, well, Eddie, what do you think the turning point was? And he goes, the first goal, which was in the second half. And it was the young goalkeeper, Mark Travers, playing out, getting it back, then shanking it. Watford pressing and getting a goal out of it, which Watford did well all day long. And the fans are just shouting behind, not at anybody in particular, but shouting at the team to stop playing out from the back. Mm-hmm. And Howe was asked about it, and he said, and I'm paraphrasing here now, so please don't. He said, Howe's post-match comments, he more or less said they were punished for playing the way they think is right, which sounded just so pompous to me. Now, me and you, we have talked about this ad nauseum, and we agree. One of our rare moments of agreement. You do it when it's on, not every time. You've got to read the room. And if they're going to keep playing this way, it doesn't matter.
I really believe there will be a time down the road when we look back on this era and laugh about the playing out from the back.
All
bad.
The time.
And look, I get that certain teams can do it. Yes, Manchester City can do it. The U.S. men's national team can't. Bournemouth probably can't. I respect the want to try. But yes, there are, like, yes, pick and choose your moments. You can't do it all the time. These players are not good enough to be able to do that. And I've said it all the time about playing out from the back. If you make a mistake, like playing the ball long somewhere in the midfield, like you can afford to make a mistake somewhere else. But if you make one mistake playing out from the back, you're immediately up against it.
But you should also not do it as a robotic motion. You should read where the pressure is, almost like a quarterback. If you're the goalkeeper putting that ball down, read where the coverage is. And I guess it's a lot to ask of a very young goalkeeper to do that.
Yeah.
One thing, and I know you'll find this interesting. Sarah Winterburn on Football 365, she talks about the really bad transfers of Eddie Howe over the past 18 months. Buying Dominic Solanke, hasn't scored. Jordan Ibe wasn't even the matchday squad, not injured at the weekend. And expecting them to be good, even though they never really showed it at Liverpool. Jefferson Lerma, she doesn't mention, but I'm mentioning him. Harry Wilson, apart from free kicks, has he been good from open play? Don't think so. Callum Wilson hasn't scored from September. Ryan Fraser's drop off. Like, think
of. Yeah, if you think of Bournemouth last year, you think of Callum Wilson and Ryan Fraser were two huge pieces that have.
And David Brooks is injured.
Yes.
Is it kind of any wonder they're in the.
He hasn't played once the whole season, I don't think.
Which, wow.
Yeah, and he was kind of a revelation for them last year, too. So, yeah, they are. You're right. You look at all that, and it shouldn't necessarily be shocking that they're in this predicament. I'll take a very quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk about a couple things happening in Spain. Well, I guess they didn't really happen in Spain, but they involve Spanish teams. We'll do that. We got a mailbag, a quick what to watch for. Don't go anywhere.
For the people that support us in that moment, it's amazing to reward them. And thank you, and we need to be ready now for the next game Sunday and then to prepare the final Madrid.
I won more premierships alone than the other 19 managers together. Three for me and two for them. Respect, respect.
I have principles that I will keep for the rest of my career and that I cannot change. And one of these principles is I don't like to lose.
Dele Alli. Son! Trashes it through the keeper and has Tottenham and Jose jumping again.
Please don't call me arrogant, because what I'm saying is true. I'm European champion, so I'm not one of the bottle. I think I'm a special one.
You had to hear that again, didn't you?
I thought you did a great job on it. and we're still in the midst of that succession. And some of those words are quite haunting.
Look, he is arrogant. Like, we know who he is.
I feel bad about the opening to the podcast.
So do I.
I don't mean to. I do sometimes feel like I'm berating you, and it's not. I just.
Well, look, I don't need your pity and sympathy either. I mean, I don't feel bad for feeling the way that
you?
I feel. No, I've said it for a while. We don't have to rehash it, but like, I'm just gonna wait until I'm ready to judge him. Let's see. Spain. I want to talk about the Supercopa.
It wasn't in Spain.
No, it was in Saudi Arabia. And the format of this has now changed a little bit. The top two from Copa del Rey facing the top two from La Liga, with caveats depending on, like, Real Madrid finished third, but were still able to be included because Barcelona were runners up in the Copa del Rey.
Like the CONCACAF Champions League.
It feels a bit like this is another one of those things that falls into the category that we so often talk about of TMF. A little too much football.
But still, this was a rubbish game that was enthralling rubbish, which I think is...
Well, it became interesting. It took about 117 minutes, but it became truly interesting when Alvaro Morata was in on goal, one-on-one with the keeper, and he was taken down from Federico Valverde, and who was obviously red-carded, and... It ended up going to penalties, as it seems all games of consequence between Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid do. And as those games have turned out in the past, Real Madrid do win it in penalties 4-1, Sergio Ramos getting the winning penalty. But all the talk afterwards was about this foul, this red card on Valverde. I'll just say, in fairness to him, even he didn't feel great about what he did. He said, "I've apologized to Morata. It's not good to do what I did, but I didn't have any other option. I'm happy to win the trophy, but I'm left feeling bad about that." Maybe not shocking, Diego Simeone was actually okay with how this played out.
not a shock at all.
Right. He said Valverde won the final. It was the most important piece of play. It was probably going to be a goal. I told him that he did what he had to do at that moment.
I don't think it was going to be a goal because... And look, Valverde couldn't have known this, especially from his angle. But Morata, right as he's about to be hacked, takes the most awful touch. The ball flies right ahead. And if Valverde is taken out of the picture and doesn't make that tackle, that ball is rolling right back to Courtois. I think actually Valverde did Morata a favor.
The idea of the foul, though, and why he did it, because some people are upset. I saw, what was the publication in Spain? Was it AS or somebody, one of the public sports websites or something, refused to give him man of the match for doing what he did because they thought, I guess, it was so against the idea of what the sport is about, which may be true. However, this is a show where you and I both sat here and had no problem with, like, the way Portugal played against France in the European Championship final. You do sometimes, like... The job is not to be pleasing on the eye. Sometimes the job is just to do what you have to do to win, especially in the 117th minute of a cup final.
And I guess we went through a period of football where we didn't see as many of these cynical challenges, but this was an epidemic called the professional foul right through the 1980s and into the 1990 World Cup. And football was, what are we going to do? It's ruining the game. So when you see it rear its head again, you...
Well, it's carded now. I mean, like, you know, even ones that weren't like this, you still get a yellow card if it's one that occurs kind of on, like, a counterattack. Like, it's not, I wouldn't say it's an epidemic the way maybe it was.
No, it isn't, but it's just...
It's still common. I mean, you still see, I'd say, once a game, somebody does something cynical in the middle of the park, but this was an extreme circumstance, and I was generally fine with it.
So I'm watching, by the way, Trippier, the only Atleti player to convert his penalty. If I'd have told you 18 months ago, Kieran Trippier would be in Spain.
Yeah, we get killed for saying his name that way.
I know.
I can't help it. I don't know.
If we just give it a little bit of, probably where it originally came from, Normandy and France, bit of Trippier. But anyways, if I'd have told you he would have been scoring the only penalty for Atleti against Real Madrid in a Spanish League Cup final in Saudi Arabia, you would have not believed me.
No, well, I saw a couple things about him on Spurs Twitter, and I think in the end, like, people saying, like, look at the situation for Tottenham at fullback and look at Kieran Trippier, what he's doing right now at Atletico Madrid. And I think a couple things can be true. on that. Just because he's playing well now doesn't change history. He was not playing well
in the wake
of the World Cup with
England. Bad season.
He was not playing well for Tottenham. So, like, you know, did Spurs give up on him too quickly, given that they didn't really have much behind him at that position? Maybe, but it doesn't change what history was. And I think they thought, we can get rid of him and maybe Kyle Walker-Peters or somebody will step in and be ready to go. And it hasn't turned out that way. And yes, they probably are regretting it now.
I was sat beside a Kansas City Chiefs fan, so they were switching the TVs in the Black Horse Bar in Brooklyn, and I'm watching the end of the Supercopa, but I'm also keeping half an eye on what was turning out to be a very interesting first half of the AFC divisional game. And this Kansas City Chiefs fan turns to me, and he goes, he just looks at Simeone on the sideline in his black garb and whatever's going on with his hair these days. And he goes, hey, is that Tom Waits? Musician. Yeah. And I thought, what does Tom Waits, you know, when you have to remind me what he looks like?
Right.
Oh my God.
Uncanny?
It's seriously Tom Waits.
Nice.
Diego Simeone shall forever be known on this podcast as Tom.
Yeah. But yeah, so Real Madrid do win this. It sets up, well, I don't know how much you want to read into the winner of this, what it means for the rest of the season. But I would say that Barcelona are now without Luis Suarez for the next 4 months after he had to undergo knee surgery. So kind of, I mean, if Barcelona truly are Leo Messi or bust, I would be a little bit worried. I think that the time is now for Griezmann. He's had a chance to acclimate, but Suarez is out, and they paid a lot of money for him. And so, like, they need to start. I think if there was a grace period, which I think is fair, all right, but he's kind of thrust into the fire now. That grace period is probably up. He's going to have to start doing
some of their more expensive trinkets are going to have to come to the fore.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting.
Before we get to the mailbag, I did just want to quickly talk about the Brian McBride stuff, because that happened over the weekend.
Okay.
He's the general manager of U.S. soccer now. Among some of the highlights from his press conference, I'm sort of like scanning back and forth between Twitter accounts. Brian McBride talking about the job, he said, this is from Jonathan Tannenwald on Twitter. McBride says, this is very much a job that requires me to be present, build relationships, to understand what's going on behind the scenes. I look forward to that experience and also getting to know each player in our player pool. What's also important, he made a point of saying that part of his job responsibilities are very much, dual nationals and recruitment in that area.
That's good.
Yeah, I think that's, you know.
I think someone of his stature, of his presence, of his resume, of his just American good looks. You need a guy going in who is going to give a player who's on the fence.
You're saying we need to be putting our best face forward.
I think he...
Well, they do...
Look. I think he is that, though. And I don't mean... I was going to say give them the hard sell. I don't mean that. But, you know, explain why selecting the United States as your national team is a good move.
Yeah, and in talking about some of that, Ernie Stewart actually said that essentially it's important and good for McBride to be a public figure in his role as the U.S. men's national team general manager. They do want him out there.
The friendly face of U.S. soccer.
And he is that.
Yeah.
And he was a great player, both in England and certainly for the U.S.
So they're going to... I can see him, and I don't mean to be cynical, but he'll be wheeled out for the important kind of showy events. He's going to be front and center in that sense, and Cordero and all the others will get on with the grisly business of running a massive institution like that.
I'm not going to be negative about this.
I'm not either. I don't know what is... I don't know... one of the tweets I read from the Scuff podcast, they were on the call... the guy said that he has no experience of being a GM, which he hasn't, but that he does have some business chops. So I'm not sure how that works.
Well, that would surprise me if he was more on a business side than a personnel side.
Another thing that
they talked about was essentially aligning sort of the youth team with the senior team, to which I said, wait, they haven't been doing that? Like, so have different things been happening at different levels of this program? We haven't kind of been like in line with young players and senior level players throughout. So young players could presumably slot right into the senior program and be ready to go.
Way behind what you should be doing if that's the case.
Yeah. And then perhaps most importantly, because people are wondering, like, sort of what has been intimated a little bit, kind of what we were talking about, is this just some sort of figurehead? Is this, like I said, just putting a best face forward? McBride said, if I didn't think I could make an impact, then I wouldn't be the right person and I shouldn't have taken the job. The only thing I worry about here is too many cooks in the kitchen. Between Berhalter, McBride, Ernie Stewart.
Sorry, he has business management chops.
Okay. All right, good. I'm sure that helps in some way. I don't know. I don't have any.
Has outstanding interpersonal skills, which are going to be very important for this job. Also a strategic thinker. If you want to go to Scuffed for that thread, mm-hmm. It's pretty good.
Yeah. So, look, I can't judge this yet. I don't think anyone really can. I don't know how long it will be. His contract runs through the 2022 World Cup if we are to qualify for it. As JJ looks at me before I get an electric shock.
I can't do that again.
look, we like him and I'm willing to give him, you know, whatever chance that I would say he deserves here. Kate Margraff has the similar position on the women's side.
Yes.
And it does sound like Ernie Stewart said that she has kind of more free reign on the women's side than what McBride potentially has on the men's side, which is a little bit interesting.
This is all very vague.
Yeah, it is. It is. Because I really think that it's vague almost intentionally, because it seems like they're going a much more collaborative route here where there will be multiple voices making decisions. And they trust McBride enough to be one of those voices. So who knows? I don't really have any huge judgment to pass on something like that just yet, except to say good for him. I like him. I'm happy for him. I hope it works out.
We'll try and get him on the pod.
Yep. Mailbag in just a sec, JJ. But first, I want to tell you something. I want to tell you it's a new year, the perfect opportunity to take your business to the next level by hiring the right people. But finding qualified candidates can be challenging. Oh, but that's where we help. ZipRecruiter.com/offside makes it easy. That's right. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within just the first day. So here's the deal, everybody. Right now, listeners to this podcast can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/offside. That's ZipRecruiter.com/offside. OFFSIDE. ZipRecruiter.com/offside. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Let's see here. You have a big mailbag in front of you.
Yes, we do. CaughtOffsidePod@gmail.com and the email, Twitter @CEOSoccerPod and CaughtOffsideESPN on Instagram. Follow us on all of those things. And we will keep you up to date in the fashion that the modern kids are now used to. James Lawrence, who was our Kiwi Kanga contact in Australia, got back to us, heard the podcast, gave us an update as it stands regarding the fires. The only real unaffected stretch of bushland is right where we are in southern Sydney. There have been a few small spot fires that have flared up but have been contained quickly. Which is what you mentioned on your Twitter findings on the show. Unfortunately, an area I hold dear to me got hit hard on New Year's Eve, Lake Conjola. My family and I have been going to Lake Conjola for over 30 years as a holiday destination. Not only that, it is where the Kangas held our champion celebratory tour. It's been pretty heartbreaking to see. Yeah, and he sent us pictures.
Oh, geez.
Before
really?
And after of Lake Conjola. So it's just so awful and terrible. And, Matt Graham, who's been more successful in the Premier League so far? Christian Pulisic with streaky success at Chelsea or Miguel Almiron with consistent, slow-building success at Newcastle? Seems like you've answered that for yourself, Matt.
I don't know. Which one do you value more?
Thanks for your outstanding work, Matt, from the Upper East Side of New Jersey. Pulisic has had his progress shunted by an injury. But I thought, to be honest with you, I thought Pulisic was building nicely from the get-go. Not everybody shared that view. He fell out of the side for a month, came back in, then had the cameo against Ajax and kind of built from there. It's been really good. Now he's been injured. Almiron has been asked to do things probably by Steve Bruce that he didn't do before. And his main contributions to Newcastle up until the last few weeks have been like really honest, hard work and running. And often his final pass or his final ball has let him down a bit, but he scored a brilliant goal at the weekend against Wolves. He's a quality player. I'd like to see him in a role that allows him to be more in the attacking part of the field consistently, but maybe that's happening now under Steve Bruce. I don't know.
Both of them, my gut would be to say Pulisic.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know if it's a slam dunk. It's a good question.
Here's more difficult to answer questions. Luke Stiles, relatively straightforward question here, but not a straightforward answer. Who is the worst player in your opinion, to be playing regular football in the Premier League right now? I just think over the season, I've said it before, with his showings, and by the way, these are all top-class athletes. Roberto at West Ham, I don't understand. Like, he okay. was just so terrible.
It's a good...
He did not look like a goalkeeper that was playing at the highest level.
I'd have to look up his appearances. I mean, has he made enough appearances, you think, for us to say he's getting, like, regular... What did the guy say? Regular first-team
yeah,
player?
Yeah, probably not.
I'll have to look. I could be wrong.
The fact he's in a Premier League team and has started as a replacement for Fabianski is crazy to me. Based on what I've seen.
I feel bad saying this. I don't just want to be anti-Arsenal, but, like, it's hard not to look at Mustafi. Mm. And I've kind of been on the anti-Granit Xhaka train for a while.
Morgan Schneiderlin at Everton. Dominic Solanke, aforementioned. Jesse Lingard.
Trying to think if these are all regular enough first-teamers.
I would think so.
Yeah.
Robert in South California. So I tweeted out Verona, James Horncastle, I retweeted this. Verona Genoa will kick off 15 minutes late because the lines of the penalty areas are wonky and need repainting. Serie A in 2020. And I just tweeted.
That sounds familiar.
Reminds me of Montreal a couple of seasons back. It was the Canadian Derby, the playoff game between Toronto and Montreal.
Yeah. Game was delayed a little over 40 minutes.
Yeah. Robert said that it happened as we were recording the show. And we commented on that.
That's right. That's right, because there was a guy out there with like a ruler.
Yeah, and string. And and it was on turf, so it was a pot of paint.
Oh, man.
Yeah, good times. Tony in Portland. It feels like you guys said, if not now, when for PSG. But did you see their defending in the 3-3 draw with Monaco at the weekend? Monaco were very good, but yikes to PSG. Monaco were very good. I think it's important to note that. And the Bignetter goal here was just phenomenal to put them 2-1 up in the first half.
And a couple of forays into the box. If this is how Robert Moreno wants to play, then this is fantastic.
Here they come again. Balde disguises. This and Bignetter! The hometown kid quiets the Parc de Princes.
That's Phil Shane and Gary Bailey on BN Sports. Phil was allowed to get his goal call in.
Nice. I suppose if we're talking, because when we say if not now, when for PSG, we're kind of talking about them making a run in the Champions League. We're not talking about what they do in Ligue 1.
No.
Look, in fairness to them, they've given up 13 goals all season in their league, and three of those occurred yesterday. So it's not like, I don't know if I could say that they've been just like a consistent disaster in the back throughout the course of the season.
No, they got cut open yesterday and a couple of the goals.
But I guess what you would worry though is that sets some kind of template
yes.
for Champions League opponents.
I think that was the point of what Tony
yeah.
was saying.
Yeah.
Mitch Carr, perhaps a question for the podcast. Who has worse hair? Who has a worse hair dye job, rather? Grealish or Sergio Aguero? Any chance for a longer mailbag discussion on the long-standing odd presence of peroxide, which is the substance that turns your hair blonde, in football?
Between those two...
Well, one isn't peroxide. It's more just like a dye job. It's coloring, highlights.
Like if you
Grealish looks good.
Well, that's the thing is like if you had never seen Jack Grealish before and then you just saw him looking the way he looks with that, if you want to call it a dye job, okay, you may not even know that he had anything in his hair. You might just think that that is his natural hair color.
Hmm.
Sergio Aguero, not quite the same.
If you want a long read on peroxide, it's not that long actually. There's a piece on Vice. I remember this vividly. The Romanian team at France 98, if they beat England and Colombia, no small feat, they'd qualify out of their group. And if they won both those games, they would do something as a team, as a bonding exercise.
Yeah.
They'd dye their hair. And so they all did. But some of the players were saying how the people, whoever did it for them in France at the World Cup, was just dreadful, and that their scalps were burned.
Oh.
Some of them had bald patches in spots. And it was okay for the guys with short hair, but the guys with longer hair, it was like really noticeable. And they drew their final group game with Tunisia, and the manager said it was like revenge from God for being so like pompous as to get something done like that. But Paul Gascoigne at Euro 96, at some point, men in their 20s who play football do that. They just bleach their hair.
You did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did it when I was out here in America.
Yep.
Just put bleach through my hair.
Yeah, I don't know.
Some people loved it and thought I looked nice, and other people thought it was some kind of a crime what I'd done.
I'm not a fan, and it's not a thing that I would probably do to my own hair.
Finally, Andrew, got some very interesting feedback. I tweeted out, is this ever okay, a video of Aston Villa fans leaving in their droves, leaving Villa Park on the 28th minute of their hammering by Manchester City. And the question I put out there was, is this okay? Like, within the, you know, football fans and passion and
in the
support,
28th minute?
And supporting your team, is it okay?
No.
No.
In the 28th minute, you said?
Yes.
No.
Yeah, they're going out of the ground. It's 28:42 and they're streaming out the exits.
No.
It was interesting. So,
unless they're trying to make some bigger point, like unless there's some kind of protest or something like that, okay. But if it's just purely of, I can't be bothered with this anymore.
So Erica tweets us. She said, my dad and I left a high school football game with 2 minutes left, and then we walked out of the parking lot and my team scored and won. Also, as a former cheerleader, it really sucks to see people streaming out of the stadium for whatever reason. Like John Conte says, it's not okay. Then we got a lot of what was, I would call, kind of transactional stuff. Great Basin Bear said, I pay for the tickets. I can leave whenever I please.
I'm true. Under,
no, yeah, you, of course you can. But whether this puts you on a lower rung of fan is I think, the question. A lot of people were very, very, you know, kind of...
Look, it does. I don't know if it puts you on a lower rung of fan, but you just got to own it if you then miss history. Like you were talking about the Kansas City Chiefs game before. I wonder if anyone left when they were down 24-0. They then came back and won 51-31. Like, if you left because you quit on your team, then you got to own that. I quit on this team. Like, that has to be a learning experience. And yeah, Villa didn't come back and win that game, but like, I don't know. That doesn't make you less of a fan, but there's something about...
Keith made the point, how people interact with their club is completely up to them. And I just said, absolutely, and I wouldn't dispute that, but there are certain modes of behavior that hardcore fans engage in, and in that context, leaving after 25, 28 minutes is verboten.
I think that's too early.
It is too early. Have you ever, what's the earliest you've left a game in disgust?
I can't actually think of a time.
I sat through Ireland 0, Germany 6. Well, I think it was 6-1 in the end. I sat through the whole of that. I mean...
Sometimes, like, I feel like it's kind of almost your responsibility as a fan
to bear witness.
You have to punish yourself.
Yeah, it is part of it.
Yeah, yeah. Is that it?
That's the mailbag.
All right, there you go. Let's see. I will give you my very quick thing that happened today that I had mentioned at the start of the show.
Andy's life problems.
I want to tell you about. I want to tell you conveniently about other life problems, JJ. I want to tell you that 66% of men start to lose their hair by age 35. And once you've noticed thinning hair, it can be too late. Is that hairline slowly starting to move backwards? Any bald spots yet? Well, the best way to prevent more hair loss is to do something about it while you still have time.
Like David Silva did, where he took all the hair in Europe and put it on his head.
It was jarring. And when he went through that phase of baldness or whatever,
when it was
kind of
put back in.
Yeah. It was jarring to see him
way. Yeah, but now he's come back, and I would imagine there's a man in Spain going around where the hair has been taken from him. Yeah.
Well, it's time to grab the new year by the follicles. Here's to a year of personal growth. Why do guys turn to weird solutions or they do nothing when they can turn to medicine and science? The solution, JJ, 4hims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and other wellness supplements for men. It's time to write a new chapter, one in which you have hair. Thanks to science, baldness is now optional. Hims is helping guys to be the best version of themselves with licensed physicians and FDA-approved products to help treat hair loss. 4Hims connects you to real doctors online, which could save you hours. Completely confidential and discreet. They answer you answer a few quick questions, and a doctor will review. And if they determine it's right for you, they can prescribe you medication to treat hair loss that's shipped directly to your door. Dive into 2020 hair first. Right now, our listeners can get started with their first month free. Go to 4hims.com/offside. That's 4hims.com/offside. FORHIMS.com/offside. Prescription requires an online consultation with a physician who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Offer valid only if prescribed. 3-month minimum subscription. Additional restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information. Remember, that's 4hims.com/offside. Very quickly here, JJ, before what to watch for, my only thing, I don't need to make a big thing out of it, but I wonder if on the train today, you're in a confined environment.
Oh, yeah.
You kind of don't have anywhere to go.
Gotcha.
You are where you are. And a woman is like doing nail polish on her fingers, and the smell has now consumed the entire train car.
She sat down doing nail polish on the train,
and like you know that smell.
Oh, it's pungent,
right?
It's toxic. It's so strong.
Yeah. And so it's not a big thing because I get that we're all in a rush and like we have to get stuff done where we can. Sometimes.
I know,
so I don't want to like, but I kind of was like, really, like you know. That this whole subway car, or not subway, it was on the Metro North train. I was like, you know, this whole train car, like, it's like fumes just everywhere. We can't open a window. You know, I don't know. Just a little thing. But I was like, eh, I didn't need that.
No.
I commute in.
I mean, the New York City subway, you can see people do all kind of ablutions. They will, you know, cut their nails. They will, what's the other one I saw? Oh, yeah, nose hair. Guy with the nose hair trimmer on the subway.
I feel like, though, it's. Subway, it's almost part of the character of the subway.
Getting hit by shrapnel from a toenail?
Yeah, it's just like part of, it's almost like an experience.
Yeah.
On the New York City subway.
Where are you with bring food on the subway? Pizza, okay, right?
I've never eaten on a subway.
If you're in a rush, you've never grabbed a slice, brought it downstairs with you?
Have I gotten takeout and then? I can tell you I've never eaten food on the subway.
Interesting.
I might have had food with me, but I never actually ate it there in front of everybody. Yeah,
no. That is curious to me.
I think it's the right thing to do.
I think you might be right. I've seen people eat entire Chinese in front of like.
Oh my god! Yeah. It's also messy because you know people just like leave their.
Oh,
stuff
you should have seen a guy with the chicken bones. Oh my god! He had a chicken bucket. Nom 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 nom. And then into the mouth and give it a kind of a pull
you
to make sure that meat
every
was
last
off.
Piece.
And then lick the fingers and go, too much.
Yeah. Let's see. Super quick what to watch for. FA Cup replays on Tuesday. 2:45 Eastern Time, Newcastle and Rochdale.
The Roch. Wilbrahimovic. Another chance for a cameo for him.
After he scored the equalizer in the first leg. It's not really legs.
Newcastle have to win that.
Yeah. And then also Tuesday at 3:05, Tottenham and Middlesbrough.
The return of Woodgate and Robbie Keane to, well, a changed White Hart Lane. Is there any nostalgia in this game for you? Do you look at Woodgate and Robbie Keane and think of early days?
Well, they both have made, like, even Jonathan Woodgate, in a relatively limited amount of time, made a big impact. He scored the winner for them against Chelsea in what was then the Carling Cup final at Wembley, in extra time.
Yeah, magic wand day.
Yeah, and obviously Robbie Keane is kind of like,
Spurs.
He's a club favorite. I mean, people love him.
So you wouldn't mind?
Well, I don't want to lose to them. Like, I enjoy them, but I'm not willing to concede this because I like them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always wondered how Woodgate's viewed at various clubs because he was injured so often.
Yeah. I will say, though, on a serious note, Tottenham better win this because their season, to me, is kind of now in that place where it's going to be defined by what they do in cups, whether it be this one or the Champions League. They can't bow out in the third round of this competition. And then one EPL game I wanted to mention, still kind of a ways away. It's only Monday, but this Sunday, just know everybody, at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time, it's Liverpool and Manchester United at Anfield. I don't know. There's
still a massive game. It doesn't matter how far Liverpool go ahead or how far backs United fall. It's just such a big game.
Yeah, it feels. Look, I don't know exactly what I think of Manchester United. They're certainly not a great team. I don't think they're a bad team. But there are limited, it feels like there are limited opportunities for Liverpool to slip up and lose that, have that elusive loss appear if you're someone who's rooting for that.
Now they've had a blind spot against United, certainly away from home. I mean, Klopp has not been good at Old Trafford, certainly not in the league. That said, it's Anfield.
Yes.
So
where they
the expectations are that United will be.
That's the expectation anywhere.
Beaten.
Yeah. I don't know who the opponent could be right now that Liverpool could go up against where that is not the expectation. Champions League included. There's no team that they'll be faced against in any competition where they'll be considered an underdog.
The LA Lakers.
I guess if they're playing basketball, then yes. That's what we're at.
Are we in a better place than when we started the podcast?
Do you hate me? No, God. I resent the question. Here's what I hate right now. Hmm. I kind of hate talking about Tottenham because it's become...
There's plenty of listeners who would just love if we never did.
But like, it's just become such a force of negativity. And so like that combined with just all the stuff that I'm seeing and like all the, I don't know, I feel like the discourse among, within the own, like its own fan base has just become so divisive. And it's just, I don't know, like it's just become like frustrating when it was, we're not that far removed from when it was like one of my favorite things in life was talking about Tottenham and watching this team play. Now it's just like, just feels like a chore, but. That's where it's at with them. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to take it out on you. We just happen to disagree.
I'm about to offer the olive branch.
What is that?
We need to go and see 1917 together.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
Is it possible? It's playing at a theater beside us. One, the Nighthawk in Park Slope where you can...
I'm not going to go to
have
Brooklyn.
Your...
You can... Come on, that's not fair. That's not
but
fair.
We can eat food together and...
I was talking to someone about that recently. That does nothing for me.
But they come along so low.
I've been to those places. Yeah. I've been to those places before. I don't know. Like when I'm at a movie theater, you're right. They do it as discreetly as they can, but everyone knows when it's happening. And when I'm in a movie theater, I don't want like when if there's a guy four rows away from me who just goes to so as much like check a text message, let alone like
that annoys you.
Even the glow of his screen. Now I'm out of it.
Don't break my immersion. Okay.
Like, I don't know. Were we hurting for like a two-hour window where we couldn't have a full meal in front of us that badly that these places need to exist?
I totally get what you're saying, but this place is so much fun. Like, in the lead into the movie, they don't show you trailers. Somebody has chopped up interesting pieces that pertain to the movie.
Okay.
So, like, in terms of, what was it I saw? The last film I saw there, well, for example, I'll take the Dick Cheney movie from last year.
Mm-hmm.
They had all these reports and pieces from the TV from what seemed like forever ago, but it's only really like 15, 16 years ago. And they spliced that together and they played pop culture moments from that era at the time. And it kind of sucked you into that.
I think that's
and
cool.
It got you ready for the film. And I thought you would like that. You don't want to come to my neighborhood.
All right,
so,
fine. You want to come. Like, to my neighborhood, I'm trying to think of what that would... It's not Connecticut. I'm trying to think, though, of, like, the actual time
will we go,
would be.
Will we go to... we could go to Lower East Side. There's a good movie theater down there.
There's hundreds of movie theaters.
So can we go and see it together this week?
I would love
week?
To see it. Is I'm that desperate to see it.
Is that possible?
We'll find a time.
People are saying it's better than you could have expected.
I just won Best Picture at the Golden Globes, and he won Best Director. Well, this was fun, man. We'll be back with you next week, I guess, to look back at this Liverpool-Manchester United
Something major
match.
Happens over the next few
course,
days.
I'll
demand that we put up the bat signal.
Of course. Well, hey, to you I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.